When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the No Bad Dogs podcast with me, Tom Davis, America's Canine Educator, the podcast where we love, live, and of course, work with dogs. Hey, thank you guys so much for joining me here today. This podcast is brought to you by my friends over at Dogcha. They're my favorite e-collar remote collars to use during dog training. You can visit them online at www.dogcha.com for all of the remote collar training collars, etc. So today we have an online session. This is an individual that has a service dog, a young service dog that actually was attacked outside of a dog park. And so she's just trying to go through the right precautions to get her dog and herself out of this rut of being nervous around other dogs. And the dog has definitely adopted out some nervous and anxiety tendencies around other dogs because of this issue, which I know a lot of people have a lot of issues with this type of stuff where something traumatic had happened and it's hard to like get out of that rut, as well as just basic dog reactivity on the leash. So this is going to be a podcast regarding that. I really enjoyed talking to this individual about their dog because it was good. It was a lot of good information about obedience and counter conditioning and dealing with anxiety and stress about being out. And I've been there, so I know how it is. So a couple notes moving forward from that. I hope everyone is safe. Right now, if you're listening to this in the future, this is the coronavirus epidemic lockdown. Here in New York State, we're basically locked down at least for another week of not being able to do much. So I just wanted to say that, you know, we're still here recording and filming stuff with my dogs and doing lives on YouTubes and, of course, recording podcasts. So I hope this gives you guys something to do during this time and learn some more stuff about their dog, or your dog. And I appreciate you guys. And as far as the seminar in Cleveland, Ohio in May, we're still a go for that. That's still a month and change away. And I think we're still okay for that. And if it's not, I will let everybody know as soon as possible. But I think we're going to be okay for that. And again, that's May 16th and 17th in Cleveland, Ohio. You can buy tickets at my website. You just have to visit www.americascanineeducator.com/calendar. And you guys can sign up and view details there. And here we go with the podcast.
Hello.
Hey, good morning, Cheyenne. It's Tom.
Oh, hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good.
Good. Where are you? Where are you at?
California, Davis.
Cool.
Davis, California. Yeah. Do you mind if I record this just for my?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Cool. Okay. All good.
Get this going here. Ready to go.
I have your notes here about Stark, and yeah. So right now, Stark's still 11 months old. I would assume.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he's going to be a year and like a week and a half.
So. Okay. So you got attacked. He's a service dog, right? And then a few months ago, you got attacked by another dog, and now Stark is reactive.
Yeah. So he's always had like confidence issues around other dogs. Mm-hmm. And so like strange dogs. So my friends have dogs. He's great around them. He plays really, really well. But it's just, he's always been like kind of the more submissive dog, like lacking some confidence, and so around strange dogs he's always been super distracted. And so I took him to a dog park. We didn't go in. I don't go in dog parks. Like, it's just a bunch of dogs running around.
I'm with you.
And so we went to this dog park, and a dog literally like jumped the fence and like attacked him. And I didn't respond the best. Like, I got really mad at the owner. I was like, dude, get the dog out of here. Like, what are you doing? Like, and I think that had a lot to do with it. But now when he sees strange dogs or he hears dog tags or like anything, he's like, it started off with like really like textbook reactivity, but it was and I think it had a lot to do with like, I would correct him right away. Like, he would see the dog and like kind of like low growl, and I would correct it. I used a prong collar on him, like a Herm Springer, like 2.25. And I would correct him on it and be like, hey, like, no, watch me, like, leave it. And so it almost turned into like a fear thing. Like, I would correct him. So he used to come to work with me. He doesn't right now while we're sorting this all out. And my where I work, it's pet friendly. And so pets would come in and he would immediately like start growling. And I would correct it. I'd be like, no, like, you're okay. Like, stop. And he would start like shaking, like ears pinned back, like very like kind of fearful. And so we've been on quarantine for a week because of everything going on. Mm-hmm. And so this last week I've been like just taking him on walks. We haven't been using the prong, just like on a flat collar. And I've just been kind of like watching what he does if I don't correct him. And it's very like overexcitable. So like at first, like the first time he saw a dog, we went out on one of these walks, he did his normal, like he barked and then like shut down, was like very like fearful and like, help me please. And like the last couple days, if he sees a dog and I don't correct him, I'm like, oh good, like awesome, like that's another dog. Like, you know, he's a lot more like, he's very overexcited. Like, he doesn't pull on the leash. He knows not to pull, but he'll hit like the end. Like, how I use a 12-foot long line when I walk him. We walk through like an orchard, and he'll like go to like the end of his long line and then like do like zoomies and like wagging his tail and just like very like kind of overexcitable, kind of like over arousal kind of behavior.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's kind of where we're at.
Okay. So do you think that this behavior didn't exist prior to the like attack? Like, was
it did in a much more subdued way. Like, he was very unsure about other dogs and would kind of like, so if he like saw another dog or he heard another dog, he would kind of whine a little bit and was like a little like, oh gosh, what do I do? Like,
yeah.
And he was like excited, like wanted, like really like his body language was very much like, I want to play. And it was like, okay, like you're a puppy, like cool, like you'll figure it out, you know? And I didn't really like, you know, I just was like, oh good. Like when he was quiet and he chose to look at me, it was like, oh good. And I would reward him and it was great. But yeah, ever since that attack, it just got a lot worse. And I don't know if it's necessarily the attack or if it's like, he's still intact, but I'm not sure if it's like a sexual maturity thing or.
Yeah. It's probably a lot of different things kind of folding into one. I mean, just dog parks alone, as you know, you know, they're just really tough because they just, especially when you get an intact male and there's another male, it just, even if it's not an intact other male, it just creates like, it just sucks. And
in this case it was, which made me freak out with Dobermans being prone to like same sex issues. I was like, well, shoot, here we go.
Yeah, just dog parks alone. I mean, it's even sad that you can't even walk around them. They just, it's bad. It's bad. But anyway, so I would say beyond that, it almost sounds to me, judging by what you've said so far, just like almost like PTSD behavior where.
Yeah. And that's something else that I wanted to mention is like, so I have PTSD. It's one of the reasons I have him, not like the main reason, but like one of them. He's primarily like a medical alert dog. But so for me, like, I know I tense up when I see another dog now. Just because it's like, well, shoot, like I almost lost my service dog. Like, that sucked.
Yeah.
You know? And so I've been like working really hard to not freak out when I see other dogs, but it's like, I still know, like I kind of tense up on the leash a little bit and I'm like, oh, like, shoot.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure. Yeah, it's tough. I'm with you.
It's like, shoot. Like, and so I don't, you know, Dobermans are obviously super sensitive and super in tune. And that's one of the reasons I chose a Doberman as my service dog. I've trained a bunch of them before. And I was like, you know what? I'm ready for a little bit more of a challenging breed. Labs and Goldens aren't doing it for me. I like a little bit more intensity in my dogs. Mm-hmm. I do dog sports. We do dock diving and, you know, all kinds of other sports.
Cool.
But it's like, you know, so now it's like he's super in tune with me. And I've noticed his reactions are definitely a lot more subdued if he notices the dog before I do.
Yeah.
And unless, like, I notice the dog and I'm like, shoot, make the conscious decision to not think, oh, shoot. And, like, I have, like, so I reward him with, like, a ball on a tug. Mm-hmm. He's much more, like, toy and praise motivated than he is like food motivated.
Yeah.
And so we've kind of been working on like, it's almost like CARE. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
I'm not.
Like the CARE kind of protocol. So it's essentially like counter conditioning. Like,
sure.
You know, dog sees the other dog and you immediately, you're like, you reward them. You're like, oh my God, you looked at another dog. You didn't bark. Like, so you kind of like, the goal is to like change their response to the dog. Like, and that's been better. So now like he sees a dog and he doesn't immediately bark. He doesn't immediately growl. He'll just kind of watch. Like he's mm-hmm. a little bit more curious. And I'm like, oh good. Like good boy. But if the dog is coming toward us, he starts to kind of freak out a little bit more and he gets more and more intense.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I would say, the best thing I would, or the best advice I would give for right now is just finding the right dogs to be around because the last thing you want is that, you know, that next level dog just doing this similar thing.
Yeah.
Cause what you don't ever want to do regardless of the circumstance is go out there and just assume that the dogs around you are going to be okay for your dog and acceptable for your dog and your dog's going to be okay with it. So from here, what I would do is just try to find, somebody in your area that does like group training, like open group classes. I know in California, you know, it's pretty nice there, the majority time of the year, and just being able to get outside and do group classes would be a first step, because basically what you would do is the same thing that you're doing is you're counter conditioning with calmer dogs. So you're taking, so the dog comes up, so Stark comes up, sees a dog, and then basically the counter conditioning will be from the other dog's behavior. The representation from the other dog's behavior will be mm-hmm. your counter conditioning effect. So you don't even need to redirect the dog to like a secondary reward based system to say like, okay. which is, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, but you're counter conditioning and avoiding the other dog, which is probably what you would want to do if you didn't know, like if you weren't in a group class, that would work out mm-hmm. great. But
yeah.
because of the core of the behavioral problem has to do with potentially him getting overstimulated or overwhelmed or stressed because of the other dogs,
mm-hmm.
just getting around other dogs that really don't give a crap about him will counter condition itself.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
That makes sense.
Yeah. So the first thing I would do is just like, say, okay, we have this. So this is the breakdown of like what I'm hearing. We have this problem with the main problem is probably you and Stark both getting overstimulated by other dogs just being present. So mm-hmm. if you guys can get into a semi-controlled group class with a professional trainer conducting the class, for our group class, no nose to nose, at least a leash distance away. It's not a play group. It's socialization. Yeah. See, a lot of people think that socialization means dog parks or daycares.
Exactly.
Socialization is just, just getting out and just being around other dogs. And actually, the more control you have around those dogs and the more pleasant you make it and the more enjoyable mm-hmm. you make it and the calmer that you make it, the dog will then associate that type of environment with what you want. So. Okay. That's the first thing I would do is just take into consideration. He's nervous. You're obviously a little nervous because of what had happened, which is totally fine and normal.
Mm-hmm.
But getting out and just getting around other dogs that are respectable for your space and also are semi-controlled in an obedient manner. So having, 10, 15 dogs around you that are all doing sits and downstays and they're engaged with their owner because they've practiced it. I mean, if you watch like a group class full of dogs who have gone through specific training, you'll see an extraordinary amount of engagement usually from the dogs to their owners. Where if you go out and you just like, or if you get 10 dogs that haven't been through training, they're going to be so disengaged with their owner that they're going to see you and they're going to see Stark. And they're just going to be like, all right, let's go investigate. And then they just bum rush you. And then it's very frantic and chaotic. And it's like, so just that's the first thing I would start to do is just kind of like take a deep breath in your relationship with your dog and just say, okay, I need to make other dogs less stressful. You're always going to find irresponsible dog owners no matter what you do.
Especially being a service dog and a service dog handler, we run into a lot of not service dogs in a lot of service dog places. And it's like, that's been like, I mean, the first incident we ever had with another dog was this little like itty bitty thing, not vest or anything, jumped out of a shopping cart at him in Target. And it was like,
yeah,
what, like, it didn't attack him, but it was like, what are you doing? Like, yeah, it just ran up and like,
well, I think it's important to say that it's basically letting, it's not letting your service dog be a service dog. I mean, so it's worse than an attack. Like, if you need your service dog for specific things and another dog comes up and takes that away from you, I mean, that's just as bad. So
yeah, that's why he's not working in public right now. 'Cause it's like, if we see another dog, he's so like, it's not necessarily that he's not engaged with me, but he's just so like hyped up about this other dog that was just there that it's like, I don't feel like he would even do his thing. Like, yeah, sure, you're dying, I don't care, there was another dog here like 15 minutes ago. Like, he's just very like, we went on a walk the other night and it took me like 10-15 minutes after we saw another dog to get him to the point that like he could just walk with me loose leaf and just chill.
So it sucks. And you know, if you watch or listen to any of the content that I produce, I try to just never closet that and say like, oh, it's like, it's just such a problem and it's never going to go away. It's just not.
Yeah, no, you know, it's just never going to. No,
it's never
going to
go away. So we just have to do our best to say, what can I do? So like, just to give you an example of like me being a professional and having a very educated opinion with like a lot of data, you know, behind what I do. I, like, when I go out, I used to be, I'm going to go to a trail with my dog because I can, and everyone else should obey the leash law, and or if their dog's off leash, they should have a good recall. And then I slowly, like, you know, realized, I'm like, no, like, this isn't going to happen. I'm beating a dead horse here. You're never going to go to a place where people are actually responsible and have a reliable anything, mainly because 7% of dog owners have never even seen a trained dog before. So their expectations are nowhere near
what,
exactly. Yeah. So they just think because their dog hasn't eaten another dog or hasn't killed another dog or hasn't bitten a person, then their dog is just free willy.
Their dog's trained.
Yeah.
Their dog's
let it go. Yeah.
Their dog's friendly.
Yeah. You know, my dog's friendly. So it's trained. Exactly. Yeah, so I've completely switched where I won't even go to public places with my, the most public place I'll ever go with my personal dogs is a walk around my neighborhood and that's it. Okay. And it sucks because honestly, like the more your dog is trained, the less places you can bring it because it makes it so not fair for your dog. You know, like if you want, like, and not even in the service dog realm, but just in general, like if you wanted to go have coffee on a, you know, on an outdoor patio at a coffee joint and put your dog into a downstay and you're relaxing and having coffee or whatever. And you're like, I have my dog out with me, but my dog is being very respectable, obedient, not bothering people, other people eating and drinking and conversating. And you're just being you, right? Not even on a service dog level. And then you're just going to get other people who walking by that will constantly lunge at your dog, bark at your dog, you know, so on and so forth. And you're just like, not even on a service dog level. It's just I think it's just one of those things that I've just been telling people that it's, like I said to you earlier, it's never going to go away. So the best thing to do, honestly, is just prepare yourself for that from happening. And that's what that's been my approach to a lot of these situations with people who are having these problems, is just teaching you how to handle it when it happens versus, so almost being proactive because it's going to happen versus saying like, oh, well, hopefully that never happens again, or it's their fault or whatever. It's like, yeah, it's their fault, but they're always going to do it. So that's like the first thing I would do is getting out, finding a dog trainer, telling them, hey, this is what I have going on. I'd love to just be a part of your group session once a week, twice a week, whenever it is, and participate in desensitizing and exposing your dog to semi-controlled environments with semi-controlled dogs. That way it's good for you because you can work on, I mean, I've even had people show up to group class without dogs in your situation and just work on their breathing in group class. I'm like, just seriously go to group class without your dog and just work on like almost meditation, like calming yourself down. Because there's certain, like with PTSD, I mean, there's so many different flavors of that and there's different triggers, you know? Same thing with me. Like when I go out and I hear dog tags, like if I'm out for a walk, I'm really nervous about it just because I have so much dog at the end of my leashes that, yeah, you know, I have over 250 pounds of dogs at the end of my leashes. And I'm like, okay, if an off leash, even if it's a happy dog, comes running after us, it's not going to be good. So anyway, I'm in the same boat. So it's nothing.
No, and for me, it's like having a Doberman and having like, it's like a breed with like a stigma, and it's right. Like, I don't want to be known in the neighborhood as the person with like that Doberman service dog that like, you know, yeah, is aggressive. Cause to the person who doesn't know anything about dog training, he comes across as aggressive.
Sure.
It's like, no, he's not. Like, he's
because of Hollywood, really. I mean, Dobies are like historically very sweet dogs, as you know. Yeah, they're the goofiest, funniest, quirkiest dogs I've ever worked
with. He's such an idiot. I love him so much. Like, he's such a goof, but it's like,
yeah,
it's like, I don't want to be that person. Either.
Yeah. It's tough. It's a tough thing.
Yeah. It's so hard. I had somebody once, cause his ears are cropped, and somebody came up to me and was like, Oh, he's one of the aggressive ones. I was like, what do you mean?
I know.
He's like, I know. Cause he has the clipped ears. I'm like, that makes literally like,
I know,
you know, it was very like,
it's tough. Stuff, anyway, you know, and it's like, you know, it's what are you going to do? It's like, they're so ignorant. They really don't know. They really don't.
They have no idea. So for now, I mean, because all like the group classes and stuff in our area have been canceled. I actually hadn't signed up for a rally class that ended up flopping because everything's getting canceled.
Yeah.
So for now, we're just doing walks around the neighborhood. You know, there's like some fields and stuff nearby, like for agriculture, and they have like little paths that go around, and there's, you know, a couple of dogs here and there, like, but they're all like on leash and pretty controlled.
Good.
So for right now, like, what can I do on these walks to help them? Like,
great.
Do I correct the barking? Do I correct the growling?
Yeah. It's such a fine line. It's a great question. So for me, what I try to do, you know, in anything that I do with dogs, like nothing, I shouldn't say that because that contradicts what I'm about to say. But a lot of the things that I put out there is very situational based. So if I say, hey, you shouldn't, I mean, there's a couple things like having a leash on your dog or whatever. There's a couple things that are pretty regulated across the board for every dog. But a lot of things that I tell people are very case by case, dog by dog, human by human. And so it's really hard to say exactly what to do. But what I would do is a little bit of this. I would do a little bit of like what I call feathering behavior. It's just like a word that I've adopted and it just makes sense to me. So basically, like if you have a dog in the distance in front of you, around you, and they're doing their thing and they're doing whatever, and they're not paying any attention to you and they're not a threat to you guys at all, and you can just tell that that person and that dog know what they're doing, they're together, they're not paying attention. What I try to do is like have your dog be curious of that and let them be suspicious of that within a certain realm. So,
okay.
Meaning this, so to answer your question of like barking, growling, pulling, whatever, like if I have a dog in the distance and I'm trying to desensitize my dog to dogs and my dog is kind of like growling a little bit, barking a little bit, being a little, but you know deep down inside that your dog's only doing that because they're a little bit of fearful or they're overstimulated or they're nervous, and so on and so forth. I kind of like let that play out where I become a tree with a leash and I just let that play out because what it'll do is sometimes it'll give the dog the opportunity to go, oh, hey, that's not what I thought it was. This dog isn't going to come after me like all the other ones. And so sometimes I don't immediately like punish the dog for doing that. I let it play out to say like, okay, figure it out. Like, watch this. You're about to be amazed because this dog doesn't give a crap about you. You know? Yeah. So sometimes I do allow that to happen. But with that being said, it's a very gray area because you have to make sure that you're doing that. That's why I call feathering, like just kind of slightly let them do, get away with stuff, but then reel it back in, not necessarily correct it, but kind of just go the other way and then put your, so what I would do is almost, if you see a dog, your dog gets suspicious, I'd say break. I would disengage from my dog to say, hey, do whatever you want. And then if they get, like I said, a little growly or just a little, basically that nervous, like, ruff, ruff, like, hey, alert barking.
And that's exactly what he does. Mm-hmm. He does, like, the low, like, the growl and, like.
Yeah, that, like, all of that, like, growl. Right, that alert barking, hey, somebody's over there, there's a dog, a little suspicion's going on. I would just, like, as long as the dog's in the break, I would just say, like, do whatever you want. Within reason, obviously, you're not going to let that dog come to you. You're not going to let your dog go to them because you're going to respect both parties. But you're just going to basically just laugh it off and be like, yep, you're being a big idiot. Like, it's fine. And then sometimes what happens is your dog may look at you and go, oh, Okay. Because if you suppress that so much, then it continues to build and they never have an opportunity to investigate and really have the realization of, oh, it's not like the other dog that kicked my ass the other day. It's that dog doesn't care. And so that's what I mean by like feathering is you got to be very cautious how you do it because you want to do it right. So I would suggest disengagement command, do whatever you want. He gets a little suspicious, a little gruffy. You kind of just sit there, let him do it. Don't let him, you know, drag you to that dog, of course. But if he's spinning and barking and posturing up and being suspicious and just let all that play out without saying much. And then when you feel like he's got that out of him, if you will, or whatever, then you can say, and then you kind of just walk away and say, okay, but a heel, and you put him back into a heel. So maybe not necessarily correcting him for that behavior during that time and suppressing that, because I think it's good for dogs to realize the boogeyman doesn't exist. But at the same time, like, you have to do it in reason, like obviously not tight spaces and blah, blah, blah. So I would say when to, cause I think the next question would be like, okay, well, when would I correct him for doing that? I would say just making sure that like, he's not habitually hysterically, rah, 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 rah. Like that's something that you would be like, okay, I don't want you to ever do that regardless. So maybe correcting that if it happens. And then the other thing is just making sure that if you're letting this play out, I would say it's equivalent to like, if you're going to let your kid kick and scream and like have a hissy fit and like exert all that energy, that you're in like a restaurant that nobody else is in and nobody really cares and everyone thinks it's funny versus, okay, this isn't the right place to let you freak out. I'm going to take you outside.
Put his vest on and go take him in public and be like, hey, look.
Yeah. Right. So I think like if you're in tight quarters, if you're in a walking path where it's not a good situation, it's not going to be successful. It basically, if you can ask yourself, can he learn from this successfully? And the dog's close, the dog's pulling, the dog is doing the same thing. That's probably not going to be a good learning experience. So shutting down the behaviors that aren't going to allow him to be successful in the end of the scenario or the exercise.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So like I said, like tight quarters. Other dog being reactive, that, you know, because I can also see your dog kind of being suspicious and you not caring. And then the other dog owners over there going like, oh, hey, maybe this person wants to play. And then they get the wrong message. And then you're like, okay, never mind. And then
that's what we get a lot of around here, especially now with everything being shut down and everybody being off of work. It's like, you get all these dogs who like,
I know,
go on walks anywhere.
I've never seen. I've never seen. I'm like, it's like a weird thing. Like I'm happy that everyone's out with their dogs. Like, I've never seen so many dogs out on walks or in parks than I have now. And it's sad that a government epidemic shutdown
is what's making people walk their dogs.
But
yeah, no. And it's, I mean, I like it, but in a lot of ways, it's like, it kind of sucks. Cause being a young Dobie, he's got a ton of energy and there's a field nearby that's owned by Campus that they're not using. And they were like, yeah, like you can run your dogs out here, whatever. Just like, obviously like, it's not like a dog park, like whatever. You know, and so there's nobody there ever. I work like usually later in the day. So we'll go like 9 o'clock in the morning. Everybody's at work, at school, whatever. And so we'll go out there with like his ball and he'll just get to run and like be crazy. And now it's like, okay, well, now I've lost my exercise spot for my dog because every time I go out there, there's like 7 or 8 dogs running around. It's a dog park. Like, it's, and so it's like, well, shoot. So now it's like, I'm trying to get, you know, trying to get this under control. So, you know, if we're at the field and another dog shows up or whatever, like just recall him or whatever. And he'll listen to recall. Like, and I'm learning e-collar training right now. I haven't started him on it yet. Yeah. Very basic, like wearing it and just getting used to wearing the collar, but I haven't used any stim or anything on him yet. I have a mini educator and we're like starting to kind of learn that a little bit, but I mean, at this point, like I can recall him half the time. He sees the other dog, he barks, he growls, and he looks at me and he runs back to me anyway. And then he runs back and he's like, oh my God, there's another dog. And then he runs back and he's like, mom, look, another dog. Like, it's very.
So you just, and you have to just pick and choose. It's just like parent, like any type of parenting. You just have to say like, okay, this, you know, this dog may be good for us to learn from, or it could be a bad, you know, a bad influence or whatever. But I would, I would just be careful like how you do things because he's intact and you don't know about the other dogs and whatever.
Exactly. But. Yeah. I know. I'm very like, I tend to be very proactive and cautious about, you know, like between him being intact and him being Adobe and just everything else, it's like I don't want any incidents, anything that could even be considered an incident. I don't want to set my dog up for that.
Yeah, it's just not worth it.
Everything I do, I set my dog up for success as much as I can. And it's
It's just not worth it. At the end of the day, it's like, oh, what do you gain? Oh, my dog got to know a dog that they're never going to see again. It's like, great. And if it doesn't work out, well, then they're cool. Fighting. It's like, okay, well, that's not worth it.
All right, awesome. You know, like.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm with you. It's tough. It's just like, you're doing everything that you probably need to do. I would just say, take it a step further by reaching out to a professional and just saying like, hey, I need, you know, it's basically like, you know, you just have to get into a, almost like a clinical environment where you can trust the variables.
Yeah.
And you can say like, hey, I can trust that you know that we're on the same page. You're not going to let your dog go. Your dog semi-trained. Even like the dogs who start, because we do packaging. So we do private sessions and group sessions. Mm-hmm. And you buy them in packages. And even the dogs who have only done one session and they're out there with like a slip collar and they're working on stuff are more obedient and have better expectations than dogs who have never been through training, even just one session, because people just know.
Yeah.
It's more about a respect thing. It's like almost like the martial arts community where like your first session, like you're not like by any means a black belt, but the respect and the level that you have for anything changes. Like everything changes where you're like, whoa, this is what it's about. And you're like, mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you see people who are really good at it and you're like, whoa. I thought I was, you know, whatever. And that's what it comes down to in training. When you actually see how training works and you see what a trained dog can do for your life and everything. So anyway, so as far as that goes, I would be doing that, avoiding places at all costs. And then I would say that what is your ultimate goal besides trying to get, because your goal isn't really to like get him friendly with other dogs. Your goal is to probably just eliminate his reactivity and his overstimulation when he sees other dogs, right?
Yeah, like I don't, so like my retired service dog is not like, he's dog neutral, literally doesn't care. Like he doesn't like to play. If a dog tries to play with him, he's like, no, go away, like I don't want to play.
Mm-hmm.
But he, like we would walk around in public, there'd be another dog, he wouldn't even look at it. Like it was very like, didn't really care about other dogs, would glance at it and just kind of be like, oh, look, a dog, and then move on, you know? So I think, like, long-term goal would just be, like, he can look at another dog, like, he can check it out. Like, I actually like that, especially, mm-hmm. like, when we're working in public. Like, I want my dogs to know that there's another dog there. I don't mind that, but it's the barking, the growling, the lack of focus. Like, it's like he disengages from me and then is completely hyped up. For like I said, like I mean 15 minutes afterward. It's like a lot.
Yeah. So
and so just to teach him that other dogs are something to be calm about and not freak out and like
yeah, I think you
don't have to lose your mind over it, sort of a deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the next step is just getting your obedience. So the first step is what we talked about with desensitization, as well as just trying to calm you and your dog down during while other dogs are present. I think the next step, which will be a little bit more applicable to realistic environments outside of group class, would be obedience, engagement. So one thing I would be working on is, because he's young, he's still learning. One thing I would try to be working on is like a disengagement to something. So if he catches an eye of another dog walking, I would, so you don't want to, you got to be careful how you do this, because you don't want to start training the dog and marking the dog of a dog, meaning you change, because then they will highlight and single out other dogs even more because you change. So if he sees another dog and he changes a little bit and then all of a sudden you change, then you're basically marking that. So a lot of dog owners who have dog reactivity issues is caused by them without any altercation from other dogs or being attacked, simply because they see another dog and they get nervous, and then the dog basically pins, why is my owner? Oh, there's a dog. And then they do that 20 times, and then the dog actually becomes leash reactive because the owners told them to.
That's exactly what we've been doing, and I think a lot of that has. So it's been very like, he has like a really good like watch me command. So we've seen the other dog, and then it's like, oh, Stark, watch me. And so now it's like there's this command that he's learned to associate with when we see another dog. And so now it's like, and I think that's honestly what made like tags and like nails on the ground, like hearing another dog.
Yeah.
I didn't even realize I was doing that. And that's 100%, you know, my bad.
Yeah. And it's mainly because, you know, the psych, and I'm big about like, I love psychology and like behavior, both with human and dogs. That's what I love that. And mainly it's because if you think about what you're doing is like, you're going out for a walk. You're like, oh, I'm going to go walk my dog. And then you're like, you're not really thinking about a lot of other things. So you're out enjoying your walk and you're doing a little bit of training and you're getting fresh air and it's great and your dog's happy. And then all of a sudden you see another dog and then you go into train mode and you kind of forget, you kind of forget that, you know, so you're only utilizing that training kind of on the wrong times. Well, not on the wrong times, but you're marking that. So you just, so what I would start doing is going out and using all of your training that you would normally do when you see another dog without any other dog. So you're basically putting the other end of the bat, you're filling up the other end of the basket where you might do it sometimes when there's a dog. So he can't have any correlation. That's what you want. Because right now he's completely correlating. When you do watch me, he'll leave it, whatever. He's like, okay, where's the dog? I've seen dogs literally do that. Well, you'll say, Stark, watch me. And the dog literally looks and scales for the dog. As soon as they identify the dog and they know where they're at, then they'll do the watch me command because they use it every single time when there's another dog. So starting to desensitize that as well. You can do it in your home, on your walk. Do more of that obedience that you're using to counter condition the dog reactivity or overstimulation. Do more of it without the dogs.
Okay.
So that it's kind of like the boy who cried wolf thing where when you actually need it, it's going to work flawlessly because he's like, yeah, we do this all the time. And you're basically starting to desensitize that correlation.
That makes sense. Yeah. Because like something like watch me, we use like all the time because being an 11-month-old puppy will be like, training a new trick or working on our obedience or training a new service dog task. And then he'll be like, oh my God, butterfly. It's like, hey buddy, like watch me. Like we're working here. Like, you know, but definitely like my body language of like, I totally get what you were saying about like, oh, like, you know, you're out walking your dog and then all of a sudden like your trainer voice like, comes on. You're very
right. Like, okay. Now you care all of a sudden. Right.
Now all of a sudden I care about what you're doing.
Yeah. So be careful. Be careful how you do that. And again, like it's just something that a lot of dog owners don't realize they do. So just be careful about that. The other thing I would do is he is ball motivated or tug or something you said?
Yeah. We use, I've got this for him. It's like a paracord with like
with a ball. Yeah.
A ball.
Got
He's
it.
On its last leg.
Yeah.
Bent over. But he loves this thing. I've got like four of these. I always keep one in my pocket when we're out. And I use food too. Like I'll bring like. So like usually on like our morning walks, I'll bring like a little bit. He eats half kibble and half raw.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll bring like the half of his meal that's kibble with us. But in those situations, like where he sees another dog and he's overstimulated, he won't take the kibble. But like he'll gladly like if he sees the other dog and I'm like, oh, like you didn't bark, like yay, good job. He'll gladly come back like for the tug, and then he's good. Off the other dog completely. He doesn't care because I have the tug, and like that's awesome.
Yeah,
like that's like his high value. Like we'll do anything for
good
kind of reward.
Good. Yeah, I would do. The other thing that I would suggest too is like if you're savvy with training in general, just doing like a focused heel with him as well will help you with a lot of situations.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a good thing to do as well. To just when you see another dog, basically what you would do with the focused heel is get him to look at you as you're walking. So it's basically like a moving watch me command.
Because you almost like the competition kind of style.
Yeah, it's like a competitive heel. Basically, just getting your dog to look at you and engaged with you as you're walking. And I have a bunch of videos on how to do that if you're unfamiliar with that. And actually, the master, in my opinion, at focused healing is Forrest Mickey. And he has a lot of videos on Learburg, which is Leerburg.
Yeah, I like Learburg. I don't watch a ton of YouTube, but I've watched like a lot of your videos.
Cool.
Like to watch Learburg a lot and stuff.
Thank you. Yeah, Learburg. So Forrest Mickey is one of my good friends. I was actually supposed to go see him next month. But anyway, he's the master at focused healing, in my opinion. He's really, really talented. He breaks things down very easily and compartmentalizes everything in steps. He's a great teacher. So I would look at some of his stuff, you know, going through quarantine and having not much else to do. That's good content to.
Yeah, I was like, thanks, Stark, for deciding that, like,
yeah,
this dog thing is going to be a really huge issue when we're on quarantine for the next 2.5
weeks. Yeah.
Like, we're going to...
Gives you something to do.
You know, like, my service dog trainer friends were like, well, you have to pull him from public access. I'm like, good, we're not doing public access right now anyway. Like, my immune system's crap. Like, I'm not going grocery shopping.
Right.
Like, are you kidding? Like, you know, I'm like, sweet. It gives me more time to, like, work through this with my dog.
So yeah,
just, everything worked out really, really well.
Yeah, it's a weird... The timing about all this is... It's weird. It's almost like... It's like a blessing and a curse. It's like when this all happened, it's kind of like, man, I really do need like a couple weeks off to like gather, like, cause it just seems yeah. like, it just seemed like, and I know everyone else thinks the same way, is like, you just, everyone that I've talked to has just been like, I've been running for years and like having this mandatory disconnect from just doing nothing but relaxing and working from home is almost like, is almost needed, you know. It's really it's weird.
It's insane. I mean, my life is like a million miles an hour. It's like I'm a college student, I work full-time, my dogs are a full-time job, like I wake up at 5 o'clock to run my dogs every morning. Like, it's very like,
yeah, it's
my
weird.
Life is go go go. And like the other day I was sitting at home and I was like, I'm sitting in my house.
Yeah,
like, seriously, that doesn't happen. Like, I sleep in the bed in the corner and that's it.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
And I train my dogs in here and that's otherwise, yeah. I'm like on the go and like between dog sports and school and work and just like I'm constantly running around and it's been crazy, but it's my dogs are with it. You know, it's like what do I do when I'm bored? I teach my dog a stupid trick. You know,
The dogs are really benefiting from this, and it also just gives you an opportunity to take a step back and realize how busy you are too.
Yeah.
Like I canceled like 4 flights just in this 2-week quarantine, and I was like, why was I flying to 4 different states in like less than 14 days? And it really, it's a crazy realization. This whole unplug thing. It's crazy.
Yeah. No, it's been much needed, and it's
just
like, you know, focus on like,
oh, yeah,
you
know, I don't want anybody to get sick, but I mean, this is kind of like it's a more pleasant than I thought experience.
Yeah. Same. Definitely.
So with the other thing I would say is like when you're focused healing and stuff, you can also do like a lot of directional changes. So if you watch, you know, some of my healing videos and even dog reactivity videos, I do a lot of redaction because what it does is it makes the dog engage with you through leash pressure. So you go one way and then all of a sudden you turn and you go the other way. And if they don't comply, then they get a correction by the leash or whatever.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that's something that I would suggest too, is maybe just going out and doing a lot of like directional changes stuff, like changing up your healing patterns to get the dog engaged with you instead of just going, you know, from A to B. You go A to B, back to A, back to A, back to B, like, and really just switch up your patterns to get your dog engaged with you. And I find, especially with a dog that has a good attention span with the motivation to work for an item, it really makes like your whole life easier, because like same thing with my Dutch Shepherd. Like when I'm out, if I have a reward, whether it's food or a ball or a tug or anyway, she'll play tug with her leash. Like she will tug on anything. She doesn't care.
Yeah.
I could like take off my shirt and she'd have tug with it. Like anything.
Yep.
She played tug with anything. So me being able to say, hey, I got something, it just makes her like hyper focused on me. And nothing else matters. So that's one thing too, to just go back to the basics of building your drive for certain items. Like if your ball is, if Stark like loves the ball, taking that ball and just building it even more, playing more tug to build that drive and doing a lot of like, not antagonizing, but teasing stuff like with the ball, like a lot of misses, put it back on you, heal and then break and then give it to him and just really basically revving up that drive. So where he's just like they do in like protection stuff where you basically just do tie backs and you just make a miss. And then they hit really hard and nothing else matters. They're like, give it to me. So it's a little bit of prey drive. But that's one thing you can do too on your walks is just, have you looked into, like a Topmatic system?
A what? There we go.
Yeah. So
that's your answer.
Yeah, so I'll send it to you. But Topmatic is basically a magnetic ball. This is a really cool thing for people who are working with like a lot of competitive heelers do it, but I like to use them because they essentially get the dog so focused on you. So a Topmatic ball is basically, you have a ball on a string just like you have.
Okay.
And it has a magnet in it. Okay. And then, mm-hmm. and then it comes with two other magnets. Okay. And you take those two magnets and you put it anywhere on your body. And then you can stick your ball to anywhere on your body. So a lot of people, especially in the competitive world, will put it like on their shoulder. So you can heal and your dog's focused. And then you do maybe three steps and then you pay him with it. And so on and so forth. So a Topmatic ball, you can find them. You can probably get them right on Amazon, but I know Learberg sells them. But anyway, so what you can do is put that on you. So basically taking that drive of the ball you already have.
Yeah.
And you just, what I do is that you take the magnets, you stick one under your shirt and then the other one on the outside of your shirt. So they stick together and you take your ball, which has a magnet in it, you stick it right on there and then it just stays there. It's really nice. So you get like a really nice, and you just heal and you have free access to like your hands and you're just walking. And so that's a nice thing to use when you're trying to get a dog engaged to you or trying to get your dog to look at a certain part of your body. Mm. So anyway, you can look into that too. It's a really nice,
tool. Definitely. No, and that might be worth, like, I don't know if there's a way to, like, because for him, it's the ball combined with the tug. Like, I really have the ball, so it's something that he can, like, hit.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, just, like, a fleece tug or something, like, I found that it was really awkward to work with, like, if we're working in public or just whatever. Like, it's awkward. Like,
yeah.
Trying to fit, like, a fleece or, like, a rope kind of tug.
Mm-hmm.
And so for him, having the ball to, like, hit and then tug on is great. So I'm wondering if there's, like, I don't know. I'll look into like trying to put that onto like a string or something somehow so that I can.
Yeah, they have them on strings.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. Okay, so perfect. It comes, I'll show you. Sweet. I got a picture pulled up here. I can show it to you really quick.
Oh, that looks awesome. That's perfect.
So it's just like a little magnet. It's like a super magnet. And then it comes with a ball and a string. I think it either comes with a ball on a string and a ball without on a string or both. I can't remember. I haven't bought one in a while, but anyway, that's a great tool to just, you could just literally take it, boop, put it on your shoulder and then heal and then turn and blah, blah, blah. And your dog's like, boom, you know, their head is straight
like,
up.
Oh my God, there's the ball. Like, right.
Yeah. Okay. And then, and so there's, so if you get into a situation where you're training in public and you have dogs that are around you, like walking, like right now, like you're saying, like a lot of people are out walking. You can put that right on you and your dog will be focused on you. And then you basically break. And then what I do is I take the ball off. I make a miss and I make a miss and they get really agitated and then they crush it. And then they chew on it and you play tug with them. You out them, you get them to do it again. And then you pop the ball back up and you heal. And they're just, it revs up your training because your timing is good. You don't have to like wait, you know, waiting pattern. Like if you can be on time with your reward-based systems, and they get paid and they know they get paid right when they do what you want, it really revs up their system and it allows them to capture behaviors a lot faster because your timing's good. Instead of fumbling for, where's the ball? Where is it? Hold on. Wait.
Yeah. Oh, let me grab a treat. Hang on.
Yeah. So that's a nice system.
Sweet. I know that we're getting kind of close to like the end of our time and I had one more question that I wanted to ask. Speaking of timing, so when I'm correcting him, when I'm rewarding him, like, what should the timing be with that? So like, you know, if we're walking and there's another dog or whatever, I mean, like when we get to like the point, once we've kind of desensitized a little bit, like, do I ever correct it? Do I ever reward anything? Like, or do I literally just go full tree, let it play out, and then it just is what it is? Do I reward him for coming back to me after? Do I, you know?
Paint me a scenario, like on leash, off leash.
So on leash, because right now we're not doing anything off leash until I get this a little bit more under control. On leash, we're walking. He spots a dog across the street, is looking at the other dog and starts growling. And then he checks in with me like literally every like 2 seconds. Like, so he'll like look at the dog and then he'll disengage from the dog and look at me. And then he looks right back at the dog and then growls some more. And then he looks back at me and it's very like,
yeah,
it goes back and forth. And it's like, do I just ignore that? Do I reward that? Like,
well, I would say if he's in like a heel and you're making him work and he's like, and that's where obedience comes huge. I always tell people, like, if you have a man eater of a dog and they're nasty, but they have the best obedience, then you'll probably never see, like, I would rather have a super aggressive dog that's really obedient than a really playful dog that doesn't listen to me.
Yeah.
You know, because I control to me, and and being consistent with like my dog is important. So I would say, if you're in a working mode, just like I was talking about basically earlier, if you tell him to heal and watch me, or like for me, like I have a focused heel with one of my dogs. So if I'm healing her and she looks away, I'm going to punish her for that because she knows better. She's disobeying. But yeah, it depends on the magnitude of the dog and the skill level.
Yeah.
And
how much, you know, how solidly he knows the heel.
Right. So you never want to correct for a behavior they don't necessarily, you haven't taught them. Unless it's like something crazy where they're chasing a car, but you haven't worked on recall. I mean, correct them all day, you know, but within that parameter, I would just making sure that you're using your obedience to sculpt what you want. You're like, nope. So you're just correcting. Correcting is the same thing as like bumpers when you're bowling, or if you have like one of those cars that tells you if there's a car on your left or your right, it just tells you like, nope, over here. Good.
Yeah.
And the way that you reinforce those behaviors usually have some sort of punishment involved because animals don't learn that well without punishment.
Exactly.
And it's very simple to just add a little pressure, just like they do to horses, livestock, etc. So when you're out with him and you say heel, and maybe he pulls to the other dog, you would correct him for not healing. Say your focus command is really good and a dog's walking by and he's looking at you and then he decides to look off into to the other dog and growl a little bit, you would correct him for that. So you're using your basic obedience to get him to stop doing certain things. And that's why we do basic obedience. We teach a dog heel. Why? Because we don't want him to pull. We teach a dog leave it because we don't want him to bark. So you're just applying your basic obedience to reality. So I would say an example would be if he knows leave it really well and you're healing and he barks at the other dog, I would correct and say leave it at the same time. When you're teaching the behavior, I do it a little bit slower where I'll say leave it and the dog's like, screw you, then I'll correct. If he knows the behavior, like for an out, for an example.
Yeah.
If I say out and the dog's like trying to spin the wheels, I'm like, wait, what's that? And they don't know it that well. I'll wait a couple seconds and then give him pressure. If they know out really well and they're just deciding to be a brat, then I will correct the dog as soon as I basically say T and it's not on the floor.
Yeah.
So your timing of your correction and your pressure and your punishment will all be predicated off of how well they know what you're asking.
That makes sense.
Because that will play a really, it's not even, and that's what I talk about a lot of my videos, is the micro of all of that is your dog is outing faster, healing better, looking at you faster, smarter, better, longer. But the macro or the bigger picture is your relationship is very clear. Where like, do that. You're not asking, you're telling. You know, it's just like parenting. Like if you have to, like, it's the same thing as like, I always tell people, look at your dog and then copy and paste that to parenting. Kids and dog behavior are different. I understand that. I'm not saying train your kids like your dog and vice versa, but it's all about how you are as a leader. So if you ask your kid to say, hey, you just swore at the principal, go to your room, and they're like, wandering around, not really going, blah, blah, blah. And then you're like, hey, go to your room. And they're like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it has a lot to do with your relationship and how they feel about you versus go to your room. They're like, oh, fine. And then they go there immediately because they're like, I know you're in trouble. It's all about respect. It's not about fear. People think that all the time. It's like fear-based. It's not about fear. And even if it is fear, there's a little bit of good fear in there where, you know, if you're in a situation and your mom or dad or your teacher, your brother, your sister that are older yells at you because you did something terribly wrong that could eventually hurt you or worse, that's good, solid fear. Like you want that. You want to instill that into them so they don't do it again. Like, I don't like when people say fear. I'm not me, but like when people advertise that they're a force-free, fear-free training, I'm like, that's not going to be that scalable. It's not going to be that good. I mean, your dog's probably not going to, I mean, but it's different when you're applying that methodology to like trick training. Great.
Yeah.
Like you shouldn't be fearing your dog and to shaking your damn hand. But like when you tell your dog to recall and they don't, you do want a little bit of fear to get their butt back there because it's the difference between life and death with them. So it's a very,
exactly.
Weird thing. But I would say, does that make sense as far as your timing goes?
Yeah. So essentially what you're saying is like, so if we're on like one of like these chill walks where we're just kind of relaxing or whatever, and he sees another dog and chooses to react to it, tree method, like just kind of, you know, let it play out, let him do what he's going to do.
I would say if it's...
I have it in like a heel or a focused heel or something, and then I correct the behavior there.
Yeah. Yeah. I would just say like, I think that it's going to be environmentally dictating, and then as well as like what you ask him to do. So if he's in a heel and there's a dog 5 feet from you and he starts barking, correction.
Yeah.
Like immediately. But like I said, like if he sees a dog off in the distance and you think that this could be a good learning opportunity because that dog doesn't care about him and he thinks that that dog does, and you say, break, and or whatever your release command is, and he's and he and then he's at the end of the leash and he's kind of like he's kind of like basically like trying to figure out what that dog's doing. He may be wearing suspicion through growling and barking, but you're just like, I don't care, dude, you're on your break, you need to figure this out and realize that your actions and your barking and growling isn't going to change that dog at all. That's a good learning experience.
Yeah.
So you just have to pick and choose what's going to be good and what's going to be bad to learn.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Awesome.
So I would say it's really going to be dictated off of two things, the other dog and the environment you're in. If you're on a really skinny area, like a little sidewalk, keep moving regardless. But if you're in a situation where, you know, like you tried to do at the dog park where you're just working around, obviously you're not going to go to the dog park again. But if you're in a situation where he sees another dog in the distance and it could be a good learning environment because those two, the dog and the handler over there, are with each other and they're playing Frisbee and they don't care about anything else, break and then let him observe and then let him wear out that little bit. Like that's the beauty of the break command, because if you tell him release, do what you want, it kind of allows you to tell the dog to, to just decompress, like do what you want.
Yeah.
Be a dog, wear however you want. It's the difference between inside voices and outside voices for kids. It's the same decompression where you're like, hey, we're sitting inside of a, you know, a room right now full of 25 other kids. You can't yell. Like this is where you this is where you can't yell. This is where you can't throw the baseball. This is where you can't spit on the ground. Okay. In 10 minutes, we're going to go out for recess. You guys can do all of that, but it's not on your terms. It's on mine because you're in charge. So you decide, you know, when that happens. But then when you do that recess, you have to like let the dog be a dog within reason and respect to everybody around you. But that's their opportunity to be a dog, growl and, you know, but within reason. Like if you think like he's curious and he's kind of like, whoa, and he's basically going, hey, do you see this? There's a dog over there. What do you think of this dog? I don't like that dog. Maybe I do like that dog. And you're kind of like letting him play it out. So he's figuring it out on his own. But if you immediately, he goes, row, 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 and he's freaking out, you're like, okay. And then you reel it back in. So I would just making sure that you have that on and off switch very, very compartmentalized. So you know exactly when you can turn it on and off to let him know good, bad, yes, no.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Sweet. Cool. Well, that gave us some stuff to work on for sure.
We'll
just kind of see. I think a lot of this came from like, a lot of it also came from, I got him and I was immediately like, service dog. Like, he's like, I mean, I've done like puppy raising and stuff before and it's like really like chill and whatever, like you teach them obedience and whatever. But for him, it was like, all right, I'm going to totally feel him out. We're going to go at whatever pace he wants and whatever. And being a doggy and being like loving to work, loving to make me happy, he just like excelled through it.
Yeah.
Service dog tasks, like, he had all, like, the basics down within, like, a couple months. Like,
yeah.
It was, I mean, because he just wanted to learn, and he loved learning to do things and loving learning how to make me happy.
Yeah.
But I didn't give him enough just puppy time. Like, I didn't give him time to, like, I mean, we did, like, socialization and stuff like that, but we didn't do enough of it. Like, I didn't spend enough time on it.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of like,
it's hard.
All right, cool. Like you're starting to like to work. Well, and it made it hard because he does medical alert and he picked up on it literally like the second week I had him.
Yeah.
Like was consistently like starting to pick up on alerts and stuff. And I was like, all right, sweet. Like service dog training. Here we go.
Yeah.
You know, and it was like, I really, and that's like a total fault of mine that I've now learned is like, because now when I give him like, you know, so my release is free and I'm like, all right, free, go. And he's like, hi, I love you. Like I'm healing. Like, look at me. Like,
yeah.
What do we do? And I'm like, no, like go sniff stuff, like go be a dog, like you're fine. And he's very like it takes him a minute.
Sure.
So
yeah, and I think too you have to also consider that he's young. I mean, he's still he's less than a year old and he's an intact male, so he's still developing.
Yeah.
So I think in a year you'll have a different dog, whether it's what you want or not. But I think it'll be I think you'll see a lot more maturity, a lot more consistency with his behavior. You know, just like with teenagers, it's a constant like up and down of like what they're trying to, you know, hormones and emotion.
Oh, that's just it. I mean, because we have days that like it's like in terms of like other dogs or whatever, just like, you know, his overall like obedience and everything. Yeah. Like we have days that he's like totally put together and awesome. And then we have days that I'm like, why do I have a 10-week-old puppy and a 90-pound body?
Yeah.
Like what, you know, like what happened, you know? And so it's just, you know, we just kind of take it like day by day at this point. Now, in terms of following up with you, that's something that I want to do, but I don't know, like, is there like a time frame on that? Like,
yeah, I would work on
email you questions. Or,
yeah, I would just work on what you're supposed to be working on, and then you can shoot me an email and just give me an update and ask me some questions, and that'll be fine.
Okay, sweet. And then, you know, I'll probably at some point we'll probably do another session with this or something like that. I mean,
yeah,
this has been super helpful. I'm just kind of learning, like, that's the problem. I'm so involved in like the local like dog sport community and dog shows, and so many people are like, oh, how's Stark doing? And like I'll mention like, oh, you know, we're having issues here and there, and I get so much different feedback from people.
Yeah.
And finally I was like, you know what, forget all this, like I'm just gonna sit down with like somebody who I know knows what they're doing and I know like has most likely seen this before and figure out what's gonna work.
Yeah, I think it's and I think it's just about doing, and I think that that's why the information that I provide to people hits hard, because I you know, I'm just like, I'm a dog owner and a dog lover way before I was a professional. I wasn't like a mechanic that said, I want to work with dogs. I just organically got into dogs because I've worked with them my entire life. And then I was like, that'd be great to like be able to actually make a living off this. And it just folded into that. And so I'm very honest. And I think for me, it's just really about what makes sense to you guys. Because if you get put into a box and you're like, this is our box, this is the training that we should do, you know, that's why I told you in the beginning of the conversation, I'm like, geez, you know, this could go so many different ways at any given time. You have to just do what feels right for you at that time. But here's a couple of advice and tips to, you know, I'm not telling you like, this is the curriculum you have to follow. And if you don't, you're going to fail. I'm like, try some of these. And I don't ever try to tell people exactly what they have to do with their dog, because I'm not there. I don't know, you know, but that's the good thing about like the online program is even dog owners who come in, I still give them the same advice I would be giving you, because I'm, even though they're standing in front of me and I'm working their dog, I still don't know what's going to happen because I'm not there. So I try to give people, and I get flack for it, cause I give people 10 different flavors instead of just one, where I'm like, try these 10 different things, because sometimes, and that's what makes me very non-traditional. I'm not going to put anybody in a box and say, this is what you have to do. Here's how to do it. I give people the option to do what works for them and feels right for them. And I think that that's, I don't know, that's my style. So.
No, I like it. I like it for sure. I mean, there's a reason we're here. So.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I wish you the best of luck. Go work on that stuff. Send me an email whenever you feel like you've gathered enough data to report back to me, and then we'll go from there.
Sounds good. Last thing.
Sure.
I was listening to your podcast the other day, and you mentioned something about a potential seminar out here in California this year.
Yeah.
If and when you figure out and iron out all those details, I know with like everything going on right now, it's uncertain, but if you could shoot me an email with those details, I'm super interested in.
I will.
Willing to drive anywhere. So
yeah, we're trying to do LA. We have a place in LA that we've worked with before, but everything has just been pushed back. You know, we have I'll let you know, and it'll be posted via social media. But yeah, I'm hoping over the next couple of weeks things start to roll back into like normalcy, and
I know,
people now learn how to like wash their hands moving forward, and I think we'll be in a better spot. So yeah, hopefully.
So many people have little 20-second segments of songs to sing to themselves.
I know. It's funny. It's like, but yeah, I'll roll that out as soon as I'm kind of just like, you know, neutral right now and everything. I don't want to plan anything because of everything's changing. So yeah, I'll let you know, for sure.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah. It was nice to meet you. Good luck. Have a good day.
Nice to meet you too.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, you too. Bye.
All right, guys, that's a wrap for today's podcast. Again, thank you to our sponsors, Dogtra, dogtra.com. You can visit their website for all their remote collars. This was a great podcast. I really enjoyed talking to this individual about Stark and trying to develop a better game plan in the future. I know a lot of people deal with situations like this all the time. It's unfortunate, but it happens. Thank you guys for listening. You can follow me on Instagram at Tom Davis and check out my YouTube channel. Just search Upstate Canine Academy in the YouTube bar and it'll give you a lot of videos and things like that. If you haven't yet, you can screenshot this and tag me on Instagram. I'll repost it on my story. I always like to see where people are from and what they're doing. And as well as leaving us a review in the review section below on your podcast platform. Thanks, guys. Talk to you next time. Peace.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Stop in and save big money on your next outdoor lumber project now at Menards. Menards has the largest selection of AC2 pressure-treated lumber and decking, and it's easy to load in our outdoor lumber yard. Plus, you can get free estimates fast with our deck design program in-store or on Menards.com. Check out our weekly flyer for more great deals happening now at Menards. Save big.